It's those two assholes. Those two idiots you saw me talking to at the third rail.
Just he doesn't want to touch the third rail.
That's, you've hit the third rail for sure.
That is the third rail, saying white people have interest.
Third rail. The third rail here is another wonderful show on the TRS network.
It's the third rail. You will be destroyed.
It's the third rail. You will be destroyed.
Watch out for the third rail, baby. That's high voltage.
In the opinion of this reporter, if this nation, or in fact the world, ever needed heroes, that time is now. That time is now.
Like my melanin superpowers being activated this holiday season, this is happening. Episode 181 of the most huggable and most handsomest podcast ever recorded. Hi, I'm your host and resident Confederate waifu respecter, Bellerophon. And joining me today, we've got the man who's making a list, checking it longer, going to give coal to Mishlings and joggers, Nike. Say hey, sir.
Santa might give coal, but he don't burn it.
That's right. That's right. He is. We must keep our Santa pure.
Yes.
And then also on the mic, we've got the man who was asked by a journalist about achieving enlightenment, and he told her to achieve these nuts. We've got Dharma King. Say hey, sir.
Hello.
I thought you might appreciate that, keeping it nice and low brow.
Yes.
And behind the scenes, we've got the man who does all the technical wizardry, TV's Frank.
Industrial society.
Society of the technological society.
Technocapitalism. Collapse.
Graph.
The graph. Graph. That's the one that always gets me, man.
Graph.
He knows what the people want.
Yes.
All right. And before we get into our table of contents, though, a quick word from our sponsor. Frank, could you cue that up?
Long ago, the Pee-Pee Poo-Poo tribe lived on peaceful mode with the creeper and the cow. Resources were plentiful, and spawn was held as sacred ground until the white man came and griefed our server. They came with +5 diamond swords and destroyed our village and our mountain base where we banked our gold and iron. They desecrated our spawn with dynamite and spammed our chat with pictures of frogs and swastikas. Driven from the server, my retarded son, Buffalo Erection, is reduced to singing stupid traditional Indian songs, which are garbage compared to C418's brilliant orchestral score. Now for only $1.89 a day, you can support my Listerine habit as I drown my sorrows in minty refreshment. Call today, white man.
You know, it's always good to be charitable around the holiday season.
It certainly is. And also because I'm, you know, eternally 12 years old, I was muted up, but y'all couldn't hear me cackling like an idiot when you said my retarded son, Buffalo Erection. Oh man. But yeah, that was our first and, you know, possibly only, you know, fan submitted, you know, ad read. So anyway, keep them coming, y'all. Makes my job easier, and I get to take credit for it.
Shout out for the fan.
Oh yeah, he goes by the handle Potato Jogger.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah, big shout out to him. Much appreciated, and you know, y'all keep that kind of stuff going. But anyways, now that we've you know, insulted both Santa and Native Americans. Nike, what you got in terms of a table of contents today?
Well, I've got college football accidental shooting. We've got the vindication of Borzoi yet again. And we've got an incident on a bridge in Melbourne. And if you'll excuse me, I'm getting a call.
Oh, you're excused. All right, Dharma King, what you got for us, bro?
I have a
just like, I don't guess we don't necessarily have to structure it in terms of winners and losers, but if we were to, it would be kind of the loser is our fake and gay elite being exposed for just how fake and gay they are. Elite, I mean, whatever you want to call them. I mean, that's kind of an interesting topic of what makes someone elite. But yeah, this just how fake, particularly how fake they are. And then I also have a piece in the New York Times about a 2 minutes hate directed at a little white girl and the fallout from that and just sort of what it says about our society. And then I saw something else in the, I don't know if it was your prep about, I would like to talk about this Nashville thing. I think it ties into the other stuff as well, but I assume is that your prep, Blairfon?
Negative. That was not me.
Oh, okay. Well then, yeah, if we have time, or I think we could tie it back into that. I think it's sort of like a, you know, we could take stock maybe of the year, that we've had so far and think about what is coming, in the years to come and next year and so on. Cause I think that we can expect more of this kind of the Nashville thing, but we can get to that later.
Yeah. It's certainly, you know, there's not a lot of details and it's sort of a, yeah, there's a lot of angles you can attack that on. You know, and a lot of unanswered questions with that incident so far. Yeah. And then lastly, for me, my winner of the week is rappers with family values. Loser is Slavs, and the topic, I know it's been touched on lightly before, but just to dig more into it, Pornhub getting purged. Alrighty, so it looks like Nikkei's still muted up. He might still be taking a call. So DK, why don't you lead us off? What do you want to bite into first?
Well, why don't we start with, I mean, the fake thing is kind of maybe a lighter note. We can end on that if we have time for it. Why don't we just go like deep into the black pill Borzoi zone with this article, Frank, if you can cue it up on the from the New York Times, a racial slur, a viral video, and a reckoning. And I think this is again one of these kind of indications of where we are and what we are and how important it is to like, don't let your kids have social media. I don't know if anyone in this thing, I mean, you know, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, my own children are not yet in a range where this would be really a relevant concern. And I think most of the people who are a little bit too old, you know, you're talking mostly boomers and older Gen Xers, for whom this would be relevant. And, you know, I think all of us, certainly anyone listening to this program is well aware of, the dangers of social media and hopefully is maintaining as much OPSEC as they can, you know, personally do. But expect to see a lot more of this. Expect to see, you know, these kind of incidents where people who thought they were living in one kind of country or one kind of society or just a society have a very cold and brutal awakening to the fact that they do not. And you know, these people, I don't know, some of them can be helped. Some of them may just, you know, prefer ultimately to, they just don't want to be helped. But I think these are definitely our people and need to be reached out to and need to have it explained to them as much as we can. You know, we like to make fun of the idea of red pilling the normies. This isn't about red pilling the normies per se, so much as giving them an explanatory framework for what is happening, you know, giving them the ability to understand why things are happening the way that they do. Because if you don't, I think for a lot of people right now, you know, tens of millions of white people in this country, they're scared and they don't understand what's happening or why. And their instincts may be good, but they're not being, they just don't understand. And they need, you know, and anyway, I'll let's get to the thing written by Dan Levin. Oh God.
Oh my God.
Leesburg, Virginia. Jimmy Galligan, and we should get a picture of Mr. Galligan at one point. This is quite the specimen. Jimmy Galligan was in history class last school year when his phone buzzed with a message. Once he clicked on it, he found a 3-second video of a white classmate looking into the camera and uttering an anti-black racial slur. The slur, he said, was regularly hurled in classrooms and hallways throughout his years in the Loudoun County School District. He had brought the issue up to teachers and administrators, but much to his anger and frustration, his complaints had gone nowhere.
A nigger.
So he held on. So he held on to the video, which was sent to him by a friend, and made a decision that would ricochet across Leesburg, Virginia, a town named for an ancestor of the Confederate General Robert E. Lee, and whose school system had fought an order to desegregate for more than a decade after the Supreme Court's landmark ruling. Now, let's pause for a minute, because there's a lot going on already. And Mr. Levin's framing here is, I mean, to be fair, obviously he is Jewish, so okay, but I don't even necessarily think that you have to be Jewish in this current day and age to, like, you know, this is just journalists get off on this kind of framing. Like, it was named after Robert E. Lee, and the school system fought in order to desegregate in the fucking 1950s, right? I mean, like, were his parents even alive then? It's kind of you know, we're talking grandparents maybe would have been around of this young gentleman. And yet, you know, like, what is it? Steve Saylor always talks about how, you know, the further we get from redlining, and Emmett Till as, you know, having any, like, just in time, which is to say, like, the causal power of redlining to have any kind of explanatory effect as far as, you know, why black people have a net worth of like -$8 or whatever it is, on average, the more that these things get written about in prestige media like the New York Times. Frank also pulled up, for those of you in the live audience, and I encourage anyone who's, you know, interested in this article, who wants to see the players involved, you could pull the picture up of Jimmy Galligan, who's wearing like a short femme type fro, and giant hoop earrings, and a kind of female-ish, you know, loose-fitting blouse-type garment. Yeah. I don't know.
He looks like a bit of a Bug Black. You know, I hate
definitely.
To say it,
oh my God, it's got a bug. Dude, did you know that they have Bug Blacks in the New York Times now? It's amazing.
And if I could as well, just interject, right? Please, like, you're talking about the way they're framing it. As I'm kind of reading over this, getting a live reaction to it, what always pisses me off about this stuff is, one, if he hears this slur, you know, regularly hurled in classrooms and hallways throughout his years in the Loudoun County School District, then he should be used to it. It probably doesn't bother him.
Oh, I'm sure it didn't bother him at all. Oh, I'm sure it doesn't bother him at all. I'm Yeah.
And then secondly, the way they frame it, right? Like, this is, I don't know, you can always tell who's a journalist because they're a failed novelist, because they try to, you know, they try to put in 2-3 paragraphs of moody, moody, dark framing, you know, to set the mood for you in the first act.
Yeah. And it's so ham-fisted and like, this is really crappily. I mean, I don't know who is. I mean, I'm sure there's a fucking million Dan Levins in the journalism industry, and this is just another, you know, Daniel Levin. And but it just goes to show you how these people are not talented, which ties back into the other story I had. But to continue on that note, I feel like the New York Times is sensitive enough. Like, I've seen MX for Masha Gessen, because this disgusting creature, like, doesn't go by, it goes by they, right? So they do MX instead of Mr. or Mrs. I don't know how you're supposed to pronounce that. Well,
what's that short for, MX?
Well, like, you know, it's like MR is male and MS is female, so MX is non-binary. But how the fuck are you supposed to mix, I guess? I have no idea. I don't even, it's one of these things like Latinx, right?
But where, like, all those other things are like short, like for an actual word, and that's not.
Right, exactly. It's just a pure kind of, I mean, I could spurg out on like the kind of philosophical implications of what that means and how that all works, and just
go
how,
off, King.
Okay, well, maybe briefly we could do a side note on this. Like, okay, so the idea of an acronym, in other words, like a word or a sequence of letters that forms something that's, you know, the first of the letters of a series, like, I don't know, you know, USA, like, you know, is the United States of America, right, is an acronym. That is already like a kind of advanced, you require a broad widespread literary culture in order for something like that. I remember in middle school hearing that the word fuck stood for fornication under consent of the king. That's kind of cute and something that middle school kids would maybe tell each other. There's actually no way that that's true. I mean, etymologically, it's derived from the German ficken. But, like, the point is that acronyms as such are a relatively it's basically a modern invention because you need to have a certain baseline level of literacy and people familiar with the concept of letters forming words and first letters of a sequence of words to put together into an acronym. But at least when you're talking about a regular acronym, you're talking about something that like has some basis in actual common practice, right? You're talking about something that like USA for United States of America or whatever. Like at least United States of America is a thing that makes sense. It's a sequence of words that has meaning independent of anything else. It's not like requires some other thing to go through. When you're talking about this stuff like latinx, right, which is a bullshit garbage thing that literally has no pronunciation. That's what I'm philosophically interested in, is the complete and total rupture between like speech as a meaning carrying thing and like the intention of a speaker to be understood and then writing to some extent. I mean, this is a kind of complicated topic for the Derridians in the room, but let's just go with the idea that writing is supposed to represent speech, right? And it's supposed to be like there's this relationship where when you're talking and when you're writing, like the written word is a reflection and, you know, hopefully ideal, never quite 100%, but generally pretty close, of the sequence of sounds that you're making when you're talking, right? So Latino is a word, Latina is a word. These are like actual, you know, Spanish words that make sense given the grammatical and other kind of, you know, syntactic nature of Spanish and just of, you know, languages generally. Latinx was never a word. There is no way to pronounce Latinx. It is purely a product of like idiots, intellectually yet idiots, people who with, you know, maybe middling to high-ish, but not that high verbal IQs, who live so on the written page of their little blogs and their little Tumblrs and their little New York Times or whatever, that like they can create this written construct, right, of Latinx or MX that literally has no historical or even grammatical or for that matter even like phonetic relationship, right? Because it's not like there's some underlying non-binary phonetic form, right? I mean, some Spanish doesn't have a neuter gender. Some languages do. Latin, you know, of course has a neuter gender. Some it's Indo-European languages historically have had neuter genders. But there is no neuter gender there, and then nor is one being represented. Like for example, in Latin, you know, like the us is the nominative singular for the masculine, a for the feminine, and for the neuter. It's not like there's, you know, in some ways you could go back to the Latin and make an or something, but they're not even doing that. I mean, these people are profoundly ignorant. They just like, you know, the X is this kind of thing of like they want to put on birth certificates, MF, X for non-binary. Yeah, well, sorry, listen, go on. I'm
like, figure that this is not a, it's not an actual letter in this form. It's the absence of a letter.
It's
symbolic. It's a symbol. Yeah. The X is a symbol for no. You know, we understand that. That's a recognized symbol. When something is X'd out, it's canceled. This is not the letter X. This is the cancellation symbol.
If I may, I think, you know, we could create our own, you know, substitute meaning for it. Maybe MX means they're secretly based. MX stands for mucho X'do.
Would you start going like do that like a poll meme like the okay sign for white power? I'd be all right with that. No, but it just goes to show you like these are people who don't understand language, who live in their heads completely divorced from physical reality or any kind of reality really, and don't know what they're doing and come up with these insane things that then they then expect the rest of us to conform to. And there's literally, I mean, that's what I'm saying, is like there's literally no way to conform to it because Latinx cannot, I mean, it can't be pronounced. It's a nonsense word. It's a garbage. I guess now you can sort of say it, but it doesn't make sense in any language, least of all Spanish, but especially also not English. And in a very real sense, there is no way to pronounce it because it was never a spoken word. It was never a word at all. It is a purely kind of masturbatory intellectual construct. Anyway, this is the kind of stuff I think about when I'm, yeah, please.
Yeah, the fact that it is a symbol that's just cancellation means you could pronounce it just any way you want to, or however you interpret that symbol. We could
that's exactly
do it the way that the Brits say the number zero. We could call it M naught.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in some ways, that would make more sense. Latin naught.
Latin naught.
Yeah, would kind of almost make more sense. Exactly. That's exactly right. And then, yeah, so, and just to conclude it the sake of my autism, for the Derridians in the room, that just goes to show you, like, where at least something like différence would be, you know, like there's a play there, but the play is because, like, the sequence of phonemes constituting différence is underdetermined with respect to the number of ways that it can be represented in written form. Here, we're talking about a written form that has absolutely no relationship to any phonetic reality whatsoever, or to any, like, anyway, it's cringe. Yes, thank you. That is the, like, very simple way to put it. Is you posted cringe, bro. Congratulations.
Hey, that might be the show title right there. Linguistic cringe, bro.
Linguistic cringe, bro. Yes. Okay. So sorry with that, but that was just this is something I think about these things, you know, and I guess this is as good a place as any for me to get the thoughts out.
I'd say so.
Shall we continue with the article here?
Oh, sure. Please, by all means.
Yeah. Okay. So, I wanted to get her where she would understand the severity of that word. Mr. Galligan, 18, whose mother is black and father is white, said of the classmate who uttered the slur, Mimi Groves. Okay, so we're dealing with a mulatto here, and, you know, probably got racial identity issues and resentment. I'm sure that's psychologically underlying the what's about to happen. He tucked the video.
If I looked that gay, I would have issues as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I mean, there's things I'm sure there's, you know, he could, like, hit the gym, lose the stupid haircut and the gay earrings. And, you know, I'm sure he could, but he's not interested in that. He tucked the video away, deciding to post it publicly when the time was right. Miss Groves had originally sent the video in which she looked into the camera and said, quote, I can drive, followed by the slur, to a friend on Snapchat in 2016 when she was a freshman and had just gotten her learner's permit. Okay, so I guess he was a little, I didn't realize this when I was first. Okay, so he was probably a little older. You think there's something to this, maybe of, like, he's sexually interested in the white girl and can't have her, and I'm sure that's underlying this too. Another thought. So she either says, it's not clear to me if there's a hard R or not at all from this article. Like, I mean, they're kind of framing it as if it is a hard R, but, like, if you think about it, like, okay, here's a freshman high school student girl. So she should be, what, like 14 or 15 years old, just got her learner's permit. She looks into Snapchat, records a video. She says, I can drive, Nick. And then I think it makes way more sense in context. I could easily imagine someone, you know, especially a couple of years, this is 2016, going, I can drive, nigga. Like,
yeah,
that makes a lot of sense, right? Like, that's not a problem.
You know,
it is funny. Like, as opposed to saying it with the hard R would be weird and cringe.
Or it'd be like more like I'm doing it like a badass.
With the hard R?
It's way too masculine for a woman, though, you know, it's more funny if a woman says nigga.
I think it's way more funny. I think it's funnier for a man too. I think, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to, again, it's not at all clear. They don't link to the video. I wouldn't necessarily want to see it anyway. It only matters to the extent that, like, because none of this is justified. All of this is a travesty. Yeah. And this is, you know, even if she said with the hard R, but I'm guessing.
I hope she did.
Right. Well, certainly it would. Right. But I have to presume that it was not even with the hard R, which, like, give me a fucking break. I don't even think Twitter will ban you for the A instead of the ER. So
can confirm.
Yeah. So, like, everybody knows that's not even a slur. I guess that's the point here. It's literally not even a slur with the soft A instead of the hard R. Right. Whatever. Yeah. So, okay. She took this video. She's a freshman, and she just got
in the chat. We have a really good tower in the chat here.
N-I-G-G-E-X. Yes. Beautiful. That's another possible show title. I love it. yeah. So, brilliant. It later circulated among some students at Heritage High School, which she and Mr. Galligan attended, but did not cause much of a stir. Mr. Galligan had not seen the video before receiving it last school year. Okay, so when he and Ms. Groves were seen, okay, so they were in the same class. Okay, all right, I get it. So they were classmates. She says she records this video when she in 2016 when she's a freshman, 14, 15, something like that. He sees it 2 years later when they're juniors, and then holds on to it for a year. So by this point, it's 4 years. Oh my
God!
This is I'm really starting. My jimmies are starting to like blast off into orbit, man. This is like I thought I had my jimmies under control, but now they're like, nope, stage two.
Yeah, oh did he goodness. Not like was he just butthurt because he didn't get asked to the Sadie Hawkins dance
seems
or what?
That way. Yeah, seems that way. I don't know. But I mean there's obviously a lot more to this story than Mr. Dan Levin is interested in telling us. But okay, so she records it 4 years ago. And he hears about it in 2016. He hears about it in 2019. And by then, in 2019, she was a varsity cheer captain who dreamed of attending the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, whose cheer team was the reigning national champion. When she made the team in May, her parents celebrated with a cake and orange balloons, the university's official color. The next month, in June of 2020, as protests were sweeping the nation after the police killing of George Floyd, you fucking liar, he overdosed on fentanyl, fuck you, kike. Ms. Groves, in a public Instagram post, urged people to, quote, protest, donate, sign a petition, rally, do something in support of the Black Lives Matter movement. Quote, you have the audacity to post this after saying the N-word, responded someone whom Ms. Groves said she did not know.
Oh my God. In case you didn't, well, everyone listening knows this, but it's never enough.
Yeah, you get nothing. You get absolutely nothing.
Nothing. You right. lose.
Yeah. So, pause. Another side note, because we were a sprawling show. And this is a comfy, cozy, post-Christmas episode. This originally came to my attention through Rod Dreher's blog. And exactly on this, I'm really kind of – there was a time where I held out hope for Dreher and people who know him have indicated to me that – he adopts a tone in public that is different from his tone in private. That may be, all I have to go on is what he says in public. And what he says in public is just gay. And I'm tired of it. I'm tired of like, he knows better, especially if he's, has a different tone in private and he should know better. I mean, he knows better. It's not even that he should, he does. And look at what Roger says. If the Times story focused heavily on anti-black racism in the language used at that particular high school, if true, then it's awful, and those kids should not be talking that way.
Oh,
but come
blah,
on.
Blah, blah.
These are the high school kids. The kids who bullied me with physical assaults as well as vicious words when I was in high school never apologized, but I'm sure God. If I confronted them about it, they would. I don't need an apology from them. I wrote a book about it, which I talked about leaving my hometown for another school because of being bullied. Had I wanted to hurt the people who hurt.
That's
yeah,
what it's
I think
about?
It's his book. I don't think it's just about. I think it's about his the one about his sisters. It's just sort of like a Dear Diary thing. Oh, well, he said.
Benedict knocks away from the bullies.
Oh, here we go. My middle son is about to be 17 years old, and he doesn't understand why his parents won't let him have social media. My kids were all raised to think of racism as evil and never, ever to use racial slurs. But so was Mimi Groves. She made a mistake. A single mistake, though, involving a politically potent topic, blah, blah. But he goes on and on, wringing his hands about, how, we always live in a society that is in need of moral reform, and qualifies. Like, fuck off. Like,
this
just
is this kind of moral reform where we don't need it. We need other just, kinds. Deeply
like, implying that blacks thing. Don't. I mean, it's not even about, like, how a quote unquote offensive, cracker or whatever is versus the gamer word and so on. It's not about, like, forget about for a second, this particular word that you've imbued with these magical properties. Like, you think blacks don't talk shit about white people behind? I mean, bitch, please. Nigga, please.
Yeah.
Like, I just.
Well, I mean. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, man.
No, please.
Yeah, well, you know, just with some woke homies, right? Like, you talk about imbuing a word with magical properties. We jokingly refer to this phrase as the word of power, you know, because it elicits more of a reaction than if you were to start, like, casting a spell on somebody. Or, you know, it elicits the same reaction as if you were to use the Lord's name in vain, you know, 50 years ago. You know, it has, in a certain way, replaced,
GD. Well, that John McWhorter, who's a one of the talented 10th, he's actually quite talented. He's a linguist, a black academician, but actually like a good. He's definitely like a smart person and someone worth reading and understanding what he's saying, even if you don't necessarily agree with it for political or other reasons. You know, he has had some great stuff about basically how precisely any system of language exists within a, like, in relation to a system of taboos. That's just kind of how languages work, how kind of human societies and cognition work. And so the question is, like, what is the taboo going to be? And you can actually measure it. You get started like psycholinguistics and neurolinguistic programming type stuff. Like, you can measure. People have a physiological response to like taboo words and so on. So in the kind of pre-modern era, and this is true still for in many traditional societies, like in Tibetan, they swear with the names of like the three jewels of the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, we get this because in France they don't swear with like sacre bleu. Americans know sacre bleu because of Canadian Quebecois French, which is sort of frozen in amber since the 1700s. That's not a swear in French anymore in contemporary French. It is a swear in like old timey Canadian Quebecois French, which is, you know, sacred blue, which is, you know, the, I forget what it references, but they have the same kind of thing. Tabernacle, you know, for the tabernacle. Then in the Victorian era, it was, bodily functions, particularly around sex, although not exclusively, was sort of like what was excluded from polite society and therefore taboo. As a topic of conversation, and Foucault gets a little bit about into this in the history of sexuality. But then you notice, like, and this is why, like, I sometimes have gotten in fights with Mrs. DK because I use, you know, salty language, around Siege Baby. And she's always like, you can't swear. I'm like, that's not a swear. That's not, you know, you say fuck or shit. That's not, nobody gives a shit about that anymore. That's not a, that's just not a swear. That doesn't have any effect on people. It's a kind of mildly edgy, if that sort of, you know, a little bit of kick a pepper on the word. It's absolutely not a taboo in any meaningful sense, and our society is drenched in sex in no way. I mean, it's oversexed, and that's a big problem, and it's something we're gonna have to deal with, you know, one way or another, sooner hopefully rather than later. But in the meantime, sex is not a taboo in our society. What is a taboo is pointing towards racial differences, really any kind of difference, but especially any kind of, you know, any kind of derisiveness or hint of superiority, inferiority, anything having any kind of valences around, you know, this race is better or worse than this other race. Like, that is absolutely, and that will set people off. I mean, you can measure this, you know, like their heart starts beating faster, they get like sweaty, you know, you can measure this stuff. I mean, it's a real physical effect that taboos have on people. And yeah, McWhorter has, I think he's had a couple pieces about how, the mystical, magical N-word in particular is kind of like the ultimate taboo in our present circumstances.
Yeah, and if I could say DK really quick, it did, just a shit post came to mind, which you're describing a reaction to taboos and everything, made me think, you know, palms are sweaty, it's mom spaghetti, slurs are ready.
Yes.
Only 90s racists will understand.
The Louis Condé has a great point. He makes a great point in the chat too. He says that's his date. You know, they're talking about the Canadian French. That's his dated as gadzooks. Yeah. Or zounds. Like, you know, everybody hears zounds nowadays. It sounds like, you know, the only thing that comes to mind maybe is like Scooby Doo, and it just sounds ridiculous. Zounds is short for God's wounds. You're like literally swearing on the wounds of Christ on the cross. It's actually quite blasphemous and terrible if you like. And if you're a Christian, I think. To think of it in those terms, you'd be like, wow, zounds, that actually is kind of, I was thinking about myself, I'm not, you know, and I have this kind of reaction to it now that I'm thinking about swearing on the wounds of Christ on the cross. But zounds, as a, whatever, as a, as a, as an expletive or a taboo word, it's not taboo at all. It just sounds silly, right? It sounds like something Shaggy would say in Scooby-Doo. Right, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, okay.
Isn't that like a bit of self-censorship too? Like, it's not the full words. Like, it's just, you know, partial enunciation of the word.
Yeah, right. Well, it's kind of exactly. It's like an elision of sorts. It's, you know, you drop the ga part, and
I think the first word is his.
His wounds. Yeah, that actually it probably makes more. Yes, that does, and that'd be easier to drop too, for sure. his wounds.
I do like the idea though, talking about antiquated slurs in relation to antiquated farm equipment. There is a nice symmetry there.
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about like 18th century anachronisms, right?
Yeah.
in more ways than one.
Exactly. All right. Okay. So just to I want to continue going with this because we haven't even reached low Earth orbit yet. So yes. Okay. So he says by that June evening, about a week. Oh, wait, sorry. Her alarm at you have the audacity to post this after saying the N-word responded someone with whom Miss Grove said she did not know. Her alarm at posting the stranger's comment turned to panic as friends began calling, directing her to the source of a brewing social media furor. Mr. Galligan, who had waited until Miss Groves had chosen a college, had publicly posted the video that afternoon. Within hours, it had been shared to Snapchat, TikTok, and Twitter, where furious calls mounted for the University of Tennessee to revoke its admission offer. By that June evening, about a week after Mr. Floyd's killing, you've OD'd on Fent, you fucking lying kike, teenagers across the country had begun leveraging social media to call out their peers for racist behavior. Some students set up anonymous pages on Instagram devoted to holding classmates accountable, including in Loudoun County. The consequences were swift. Over the next 2 days, Miss Groves was removed from the university's cheer team. She then withdrew from the school under pressure from admissions officials who told her they had received hundreds of emails and phone calls from outraged alumni, students, and, quote, the public.
Oh, man, this poor thing. She was like, she had the whole humiliation ritual of revoking her own admission. That's because she has this brain poison. Because, you know, all this started was because she was trying to be a part of the thing. Remember, you know, she's trying to virtue signal and be a part of the movement. And she gets guilt tripped into revoking her own admission, like declining it after she had achieved it. And you know what? You know, women going to college probably a bad thing. So. This is we find ourselves in this all too similar position of like, well, you know, maybe there's like actually some positive consequences to this, but it's also just a bad thing on the other hand because it's part of the race humiliation ritual, and I'm left conflicted on my feelings about this because she was trying to virtue signal and she learned her lesson, but also it's just like. I don't like it when you fucking mess with white people.
Yeah, I'm conflicted as well. On the one hand, you know, like you said, right? Like, you know, virtue signal the coal, you know, pay the toll would be the case here. But then, you know, as well, maybe if there's some similarly aged listeners in that area, I know a girl who now has no hope of job prospects and has no choice but to be a housewife.
That would be a kind of interesting silver lining. We don't necessarily need to read the whole rest of the article. There's a few good things in here and one or two points I want to hit, but like the thing to keep in mind, this is why I started by talking about, you know, people who don't understand what's happening or why and who then get confused as to you know, what's going on and things just start happening to them for reasons they don't understand. It's not like, I don't want to blame her or even really her parents, who are obviously an important part of this equation, for giving in to the mob. Because that points the finger in the wrong direction, right? I mean, it's not like, I don't want to say that, it's easy for us to say that she should have given in, and just judging from the way there's a kind of key graph here where, what does it say? There was the day after the video went viral, Ms. Groves tried to defend herself in tense calls with the university. But the athletics department swiftly removed Ms. Groves from the cheer team, and then came the call in which admissions officials began trying to persuade her to withdraw, saying they feared she would not feel comfortable on campus. So what's she supposed to do? I mean, the university, it's one thing for just a social media mob to behave in a certain way. Definitely some of the, like the lion's share of the blame should be, you know, what the athletics team did is outrageous. I mean, keep in mind, again, just to reiterate, this is something she did 4 years prior to her acceptance. This is what something that happened when she was a freshman, video that was made 4 years ago. I think the word they like to use nowadays is resurfaced. Yes, this resurfaced, maliciously resurfaced video. And it's just like nobody would know. I mean, the dishonesty, I think, is what gets me more than this is really what I, you know, viscerally react to, which is really more, you know, at an emotional level, what drove me into being a part of this thing was just seeing how dishonest these people are and how dishonestly they operate. You know, okay, you could say the university should have more fortitude, and yes, that's true. But it's fun. Like the bigger issue, as I see it, is the dishonesty of saying like, oh, we're worried that you won't be feel comfortable. Nobody knows who the fuck this girl is, and especially nobody would know. Like people don't even know. I like have the dimmest recollection of this happening. Or I don't even know if it was this episode or I think there was another. I remember vaguely there was another similar episode with like another white girl. I think it was another white girl who. It doesn't even matter if it's the same girl or not. Like this happened to a couple instances of this in the summer of St. Fentanyl. And nobody knows who the fuck these people are. Nobody even knows who they are. Like a few months later, the only reason why this is even a thing is because Mr. Dan Levin saw fit to public, you know, he wanted to like write a story about it. Some, you know, in some of the aftermath, a couple months later, nobody is going to know any of these people a couple months from now. The only reason they know them now is because, right this moment, is because of this article. Nobody's going to know any of them, you know, 6 months from now, a year from now, 4 years from now. Nobody would know who the fuck this girl is. This is purely malicious. This is malicious on the part, obviously, of Jimmy Galligan. This is malicious on the part of the school, of the admissions officials, malicious on the part of the athletics team, malicious on the part of Dan Levin, malicious on the part of the New York Times. This is pure malice.
Of course, and it always will be because this is the first stages of race war.
Yeah.
This is how it will be waged. We could call it, I don't know, second generation race war? Warfare? Race
warfare. Fourth generation race war. That's another great show title. Yes. Yes. Not even just race. I mean, yes, this is fourth generation warfare. I mean, if you want to think about our fifth generation, you don't have to like spurg out about that.
Categorical,
yes, this is information war. Just, yes, this is
yeah. How it'll be waged, yes. To displace you. This is the new method of racial displacement.
Yeah,
and exactly. You know, I guess it's not all that new anymore. But you know, whenever it comes up, it bears repetition that it will continue to happen. And the first line of defense is non-compliance. You cannot comply with the demands.
And,
if you know somebody who this happens to, it's incumbent upon you to reach out and let them know what they need to do, which is not give in.
And on that note, actually, I'm sorry, I missed this in the Ms. Groves' parents, who said their daughter was being targeted by a social media quote. Dan Levin sees fit to put the word mob in quotes. Fuck you, Dan Levin. Whatever. So he puts the social media quote mob for a mistake she made as an adolescent. Urged university officials to assess her character by speaking with her high school and cheer coaches. Instead, admissions officials gave her an ultimatum: withdraw, or the university would rescind her offer of admission. So that was it. So she didn't even really have a choice, I guess. I mean, you know, you want to put it, I guess, in those terms. Like, yeah, I mean, and then what? At that point, the next step would be to sue the school, like, which, you know, maybe you'd win. I mean, in a just world, obviously. Well, in just world, none of this would, this, this, this dumb nigger would have never been allowed to like make this such a scene about this whole thing and whatever. And none of this would be a problem and blah, 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 blah. Or at least, you know, whatever. But yeah, they just said you got to withdraw or the university will rescind your offer of admission. The end.
Oh, I'm sorry, man. I keep stepping on you. Go ahead.
No, no, please go on. That was the end of like the story. That wasn't what were you going to say?
Yeah, well, and I mean, also, too, just at a macro level, I think Mike has pointed this out in different but similar instances, right? Like, you know, Mr. Levin, you know, and his crowd, they want to talk about power disparity. They want to talk about, like, systematic yes. power. They want to talk about, like, you know, especially when Me Too was more, you know, that sort of whatever wave of feminism that was. You know, when that was in the headlines, when you talk about, you know, privilege imbalances, power imbalances. Like, you know, Mr. Levin is a grown-ass man who writes for a premier publication who's putting a microscope on some little 17-year-old girl, or I'm sorry, 18-year-old girl, right, who had, like, I don't know, a moment of indiscretion before she even had her driver's license. Like, if that's not a power imbalance, what the fuck is that?
That's
if that's
an excellent
not, like,
point.
Yeah, like, and also, I would just, like, what if we rewrote this article to give it the, shall we say, aspiring rapper treatment? What if we put this, what if we, you know, instead of listing this girl, right, like, with all of this dark, cloudy, unnecessarily, like, verbose prose surrounding it, talking about, oh, in the, you know, in the aftermath of St. George Floyd, you know, oh, there's so much, you know, evil going on in the hall. So many evil gamer words being said in this hallway. Instead of clouding it like that, instead of clouding the reader's judgment, what if we painted her in a similar view, right? Like right. as an aspiring rapper, we called her aspiring college cheerleader. What if we said like, oh, you know, championship cheerleading athlete,
national champion.
Right. Yeah. How about like, and again, I don't know this girl, but you know, everybody gets the point, right? That like, you know, if you're of a certain, melanin concentration and you do a drive-by when you're 14, you know, make no mistake, Mr. Levin will go to bat for you, or people like Mr. Levin will make sure that you are painted in the most positive light possible, that you're a good boy, you're going to two colleges and attending three churches simultaneously, and you're getting your life together. But yeah, again, you know, some poor little girl who, I don't know, just sounds like she was goofing off and had a moment of indiscretion. Like,
I wouldn't,
you know,
I get why you say that, but I just want to push back on the idea. Like, she's like, oh, it was a mistake. It wasn't a mistake. She was using it doesn't matter if it was a hard R or not. If it wasn't a hard R, then it's like all the more of just like a completely innocent thing that nobody should give a crap about at all. But like, even if it was with the hard R, so fucking what? So what? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just want to push back on this. I mean, it's not to like, I mean, I get why you're saying that. And it's not that you're, well, that's the thing is you're right in the sense that it's an indiscretion, you know, even in 2016, to say nothing of like nowadays, to, you know, indiscretion in the sense of like, yes, purely because of social factors, something you shouldn't do. But this, like, it gives it too much credit to say like, oh, she made a mistake. It wasn't a mistake. There was nothing wrong with what she did. What's wrong is how these people behave. What's wrong is what Galligan did. What's wrong is what the university did. She's innocent in all this. That's the thing we need.
I should have been more careful with my words. You do raise a good point there. But yeah, and that's I don't know. Is there a trademark yet on the phrase aspiring rapper treatment? You know,
that's great. Yeah, we should file with the patent office. Yes, or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so now, like, to sort of conclude this, because he said talking about the rapping, because that is part. Again, where did she learn this? She learned it from rap songs, which is, you know, popular. And so since the racial reckoning of the summer, many white teenagers, when posting dance videos to social media, no longer sing along with the slur in rap songs. Instead, they raise a finger to pursed lips. Quote, "Small things like that really do make a difference," Mr. Galligan said.
Oh my God! It's a sign. It's a small difference. It shows us that we're winning.
Also, Levin does this game.
Of the,
Yeah.
Instead of the sign of the cross, you just hold a finger to your lips when somebody right. says a gamer word.
Says the, well, somebody says, yeah, exactly. Well, because they could say it all in all the rap videos, but you know, you can't. Like, and he does this. The Levin, Mr. Dan Levin, does this extremely gay Jewish thing of I'm just going to assume he's homosexual. You know, we're just going to roll with that. Of capitalizing black but not white, because you know, fuck you, because he's a Jew. So he says, Mr. Galligan thinks a lot about race and the implications of racial slurs. He said his father was often the only white person at maternal family gatherings, where, quote, the N-word is a term that is thrown around sometimes by black relatives. Okay. A few years...
Thanks for telling us.
What are you supposed to say to that, right? I mean,
that's like, you know, sentence two of how you restate the introductory or even headline, you know, the N-word, a racial slur sometimes used by black people at Christmas.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But only on that
special day. Right, on that special occasions, yes. Christmas and Easter. Wait,
hold up, does that mean that even blacks have to get an N-word pass? They get like one annual N-word pass? I thought they had unlimited.
Science has not been settled yet.
Yeah. Well, you know, the same way that there's like Easter and Christmas Christians, maybe there's like, you know, Easter and Christmas N-word users.
Yes. I always look, say what you want, but I only use racial slurs twice a year. You know, I make sure to say it once on Easter and once on Christmas.
But follow through. You know, my parents used it more, but I'm just more culturally.
You know, when we were kids, I used to say it once a week on Sundays. But you know, as I got older, I just didn't have the time. But you know, I still make sure to say it twice a year.
And don't worry, at the baby's baptism, you know, we'll make sure to say it a few times just for ceremony. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let me finish this. All right, so he says, so a few years ago, he said his father, Mr. Galligan, said his father said it aloud, prompting Mr. Galligan and his sister to quietly take his father aside, his white father was married to a black woman, who's at like an all-black gathering, and explained that it was unacceptable, even when joking around. Shortly after his 18th birthday in July, Mr. Galligan asked his father, a former law enforcement officer, what he thought about white privilege. Quote, the first thing he said to me is that it doesn't exist, Mr. Galligan recalled. He then asked his father if he had ever been scared. I mean, right. As I said, there's clearly a lot more going on here than we are privy to. Yeah. Because his father's an ex-cop who doesn't think white privilege exists and is a white man. Like, okay. Anyway, he then asked his father if he had ever been scared while walking at night or while reaching into the glove box after getting pulled over by the police. He said his father had not. Quote, that is your white privilege, Mr. Galligan said he told him. No, bitch, that's called being a law-abiding, normal person. Like, try it sometime, you dumb nigger. Like, it's not that hard. And it's like the Chris Rock sketch. Like, you don't want to get your ass kicked by police. Like, here are these handy steps. Number one, comply. God, you know, like, that. One of Mrs. Groves' friends, who is black, said Ms. Groves had personally apologized for the video long before it went viral. Once it did in June, the friend defended Ms. Groves online, prompting criticism from strangers and fellow students. Quote, we're supposed to educate people, she wrote in a Snapchat post, not ruin their lives all because you want to feel a sense of empowerment. For his role, Mr. Galligan said he had no regrets, no ragrets. If I never posted that video, nothing would have ever happened, he said. And because the internet never forgets, the clip will always be available to watch. Quote, I'm going to remind myself you started something, he said with satisfaction. Quote, you taught someone a lesson.
And that lesson is homeschool. Don't let your kids
have
social
media. Yeah, that lesson is like, it's never enough for these people. It's never going to be enough. There's nothing you can do. You know, like the get as much physical, financial, et cetera, distance between yourself and them as possible. Do your own thing because they're coming for you. They're going to take everything that they can get from you, you know, legally, illegally, with the power of the government or whatever. So you're on your own, white people, because the New York Times is going to say, you know, that the guy said with satisfaction, you taught someone a lesson 4 years ago you know, they said something that by some standards they shouldn't have said, and therefore they get, you know, the entire, they get blasted by a social media mob and have their dream school rescind their offer of attendance, and you're no longer able to be cheerleading in anything you enjoy, all because Jews gave blacks this power to destroy your life. That's the lesson here, right?
Yeah, and, you know, just since, you know, since George Floyd, you know, RIP in peace, he's hitting Fent with the Angels now, you know, since he was mentioned in the article, you know, just a reminder that, you know, his reputation in, you know, in the public media was less tarnished, and he stuck up a pregnant woman with a gun, you know.
Right, his, yeah.
I know this is tired, right? And the, like, the audience has probably heard this 1,000 times, but, you know, it's just it's just worth pointing out the compare and the contrast.
Yep.
Anyway, so I thought, I mean, I hadn't, I know, I, you know, it's been Christmas and people have been, you know, light on the news consumption, but that caught my eye, and I thought it was something that would be worth kind of going through and dissecting in detail.
I got some more Jewish outrage if you
sounds great.
Want to listen to it. Sure. We got from news.com.au, fury as Melbourne P-plater displays Nazi swastika on Westgate Bridge in their car while driving on the bridge. They didn't hang anything up. and a P-plater is something with you have like a plate you have to put in your back window. It shows you have a provisional license in Australia.
Oh, I thought it was like a poo-poo. Like something like I'm pooping. While I'm
a pee pee poo poo plater.
A leading civil rights organization has responded with outrage after a Melbourne pee plater was snapped with a camera, brazenly displaying the Nazi swastika while driving across the Westgate Bridge. Another shocked driver spotted the large swastika in the rear window of a Volkswagen Golf in front of him as the probationary driver was crossing the bridge. Outbound on Christmas Eve morning. The witness, who did not want to be named, said he became so enraged that he began yelling in anger at the car in front of him. He said,
I'm insane with anger.
Yes. The P-plate driver brazenly displaying the Nazi symbol was a heavy built man who appeared to be aged in his 20s. Anti-Defamation Commission Chairman Dvir Abramovich said the brazen display was, quote, stomach churning. This is a stomach turning outrage that is a stain on our community. It is simply unacceptable that in the current year of 2020, people can proudly and brazenly display the Nazi swastika on our roads, a symbol that represents the pure evil. Exhibiting this emblem is like plunging a dagger in the heart of Holocaust survivors and spitting in the face of the diggers who fought to defeat Hitler and his genocidal regime.
Sorry, did you say diggers?
Yes, apparently okay. Australia sent an army of diggers with a hard R to go fight in World War II.
Dude, there's just all of the keynotes there, right?
Like, so overly dramatic. For a swastika, the guy didn't even see himself, or unless he was the anonymous person, which, you know, can't discount that.
With the driver there.
So you what?
I said, are you implying that this is an instance of what you drive in there, Rabbi? He's trying to generate his own outrage.
That could also be possible. I was saying, like, the person who reported it was anonymous, and then, you know, the commission chairman had that quote to add. They say the Anti-Defamation Commission, I guess the ADC is the ADL in Australia, or maybe it's just another one, who knows. They love their redundancy. The Anti-Defamation Commission has been leading a national campaign to ban public displays of the Nazi swastika and Third Reich materials.
We should be alarmed about anyone who so openly identifies with the monstrous crimes of the Third Reich, since we know that such a belief in such an ideology is a dangerous thing and can lead to real-life violence. This goes beyond freedom of expression And we all have a responsibility to speak up when the hate, when such hateful acts take place. Hateful acts driving across a bridge. Dr. Abramovich called for the nation, state, and federal government to close the lid on the disgusting phenomenon and ban the public display of any symbol of the Third Reich. The last sentence in this article just says, displaying this Nazi swastika is legal in Victoria. Burying the lead.
I mean, I don't know, man. Like, you know, Molon Labe, if you want to take it out, out of, you know, his car, I'm sorry. You know, come and take it. How'd they describe him? You know, heavy set man in his 20s. You know, yeah. thick Australian driving racists, you know, just
this is driving.
There's an army out of them.
A powerful Jew will compare you to digging a dagger into the heart of Holocaust survivors for driving while white.
Oh, man, it really is just like mountain out of a molehill. One of the things that strikes me, you know, just kind of at the macro level when they piss and moan about stuff like this, is that there's a real supply and demand problem with racism, like overt, in-your-face racism. There's a huge demand for it on the parts of like the ADC, the ADL, all that, right? They really want there to be just something crazy to kvetch about. You know, they want there to be all this stuff in the streets, you know, something that they can really sink their teeth into, piss and moan about, and sort of like, you know, fuel their grievance complex, their grievance mongering industrial complex. And, but there's not enough supply. There's not enough actual, like, honest to God, overt racism out there for them to actually feed on. So they have to just find these little molehills and turn them into a mountain.
Yeah. And it's so pathetically overly dramatic. I mean, you can just imagine, like, this guy has years and years of just pent up, what can I complain about? You know, checks news, still nothing, you know, but I'll find something eventually. Or I could be completely wrong, and this is just how he has, like, one of these just every other week or maybe multiple times a week where he's just like, this is literally Hitler.
Literally double Australian Hitler.
Yes.
but yeah, I mean, what I really hope happens is this turns out to be nothing, a big old nothing burger that, I don't know, just somebody like, I don't know, is somebody's like Australian CrossFit, like geometric symbol, their little bumper sticker for.
No, I see the picture. It's pretty, you know, pretty blatant. It's pretty based.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was not looking at the chat. All right. Yeah. No, that's pretty unambiguous. My bad.
Yeah. Here's the link for the full picture. You can see. No, that is what they say it is. And good on you. Good on you, cunt. You sick cunt.
Well, just remember, though, you know, doing something like that we need to track you down. We need to figure out who you are. But, you know, if you want to have if you want to have 10-year-old drag queens parading through the middle of your city center, you know, that's cool. You know, there's no big deal with that.
One of the other things I wanted to talk about was the guy Desmond is Amazing died on Christmas.
Oh, dude, that was an accidental but very slick transition. Yeah, do it to it, man.
Wait, so this
sorry, go on. Yeah.
Michael Alig, who's like this infamous murderer who went to jail and got out, is the guy who groomed Desmond is Amazing, and now he is overdosed on heroin on Christmas Day and is fucking dead. Press S to spit.
Well, you know, sometimes you don't get, sometimes if you're bad enough on Christmas, I guess you don't get coal. You get an OD.
He overdosed on heroin. So this guy is a real work. He was like a producer for. I just learned this last night. He was a producer on the show RuPaul's Drag Race and Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
he killed this homo in a drug deal gone wrong back in the 90s. And, like, he, this disgusting sodomite, like, left the rotting corpse in his bathtub for, like, a long time until he and his accomplice could figure out what to do with it. And they ended up chopping up the body and, like, hiding it in multiple suitcases before taking a taxi cab and chucking it into the Hudson River. It's just a real sociopathic homo. Like, this is, like, you know, the archetype of gay race. And yeah, now he's fucking dead. Good riddance.
Well, you know, my my inner libertarian wants to rebut you, Nike, and say that
it doesn't affect what, you.
Well, yeah, what I was going to say is, you know, what two grown men decide to chop up in the privacy of their own bathtub. You know, I think you're just being pretty.
Look, maybe what if the dealer consents?
What
if he wanted to be killed and chopped up in some homo's bathtub?
Yeah, who are we to interfere with you know, such inalienable property rights as that? Maybe he was maybe he was trespassing on their bathtub. You know, I think we there's really just we definitely
yes, the ANCAP take. You know, it was self defense. He was no longer welcome in the faggot's bathroom, and so he just killed him, and it was all self defense. You know.
Yeah, and I'm joking to clarify, right? Like,
what, if
yeah,
you don't like the NAP, you know, or if you don't like that, you know. Why he shouldn't have violated the NAP with all that heroin or whatever the hell he was trying to sell at the time. Dude, some guy named, like, Angel Melendez was the guy they killed. They called him Angel because he always wore these fairy wings wherever he went. It's just, you know, just disgusting gay shit. Apparently they had, like, multiple parties while they were with the body in the tub because they just, you know, they're so, like, sociopathic that all they can do is, like, well, I don't know what to do with it. Let's just leave it here until we're done having fun.
Yeah. I'm imagining, too, you know, the two muscular white and black arms, like, you know, clasping hands. One of them says NAP and the other says MAP. You know, just
yes. Grab each
other. I think that's what's going on here, man.
Probably the, also the same guy who, like, taught Desmond about the whole, like, ketamine bump thing, you know, like he did on camera once.
I'd forgotten about that. In case the audience isn't familiar, could you just give us a quick rundown?
It's just, like, during some interview.
It was a YouTube stream. They were having, like, it was like a YouTube live stream event.
Yeah, and I guess they were just reacting to something, and, like, Desmond does this little gesture with the top of his thumb on his nose. Then, you know, it's like how you take a bump of ketamine off of your hand. You know, just mimicking, or if not repeating what he's already done after, you know, these sexual abusers, these pedophiles, these faggot pedophiles gave him drugs, probably. If not, did it in his presence, among other horrific acts.
Yeah, and suffice it to say, right, that, like, you know, giving a 10-year-old drag queen drugs was probably amongst the more wholesome of activities that they conducted that day.
Anyway, yeah, so rest in piss, Michael Alec.
Nope, he will not be missed off God's green earth, and hopefully him and RBG are getting to hang out and you know, getting tortured by the millions of souls of you know, aborted children as we speak.
Amen.
But yeah, if I'm not cutting you off, Nike, you know, to move on to something, a little bit of a palate cleanser, something I did want to talk about. And Frank, I'm just going to drop the link in the chat really quickly. So it was just a little bit more on the wholesome side. So this is from Complex Magazine, T.I., and he's, for those who might be on the Zoomer side of things, he's an aged rapper. T.I. slammed for calling the quality time he spends with his daughters, quote, thought prevention hours. And that's T-H-O-T.
Real thought prevention hours. Who up?
So, racism is canceled, guys. You know, T.I. is our new, trad icon. So,
like,
you know,
literally the only good black father.
It is kind of odd, right? Like the, I don't keep up with his personal life, but just in doing, like, you know, 20 minutes of just quick research on the guy. Yeah. Apparently he's been married to his wife. And as far as I could find, his only baby mama, you know, for going on 2 decades now, he's a wow. grandfather recently. He's got a litter of kids, and he's there for, all of their events. There was a two minute YouTube clip I watched as well, which I did not think to save. And this was from years ago, but one of his younger sons was really into Pokemon, and he was talking into the camera and he said, you know, I don't understand this thing, man. This is weird. Like, but my son's really into it. And also it makes him competitive. He wants to learn the game and be better at it. And I want to make sure my son's competitive. And he applies himself to stuff. So he like put on like a little Pikachu hat and accompanied his little like 8-year-old boy, this Pokemon tournament. So anyways, suffice it to say, you know, his music's degenerate. I don't recommend it, but, he's better than the majority of his peers. But anyways, the article reads, T.I. is back with another problematic opinion on his daughter's sexuality. T.I. interviewed 21 Savage for a new interview of the Expeditiously podcast, where the T.I. in Expeditiously is capitalized, where the Libra rapper called spending quality time with his daughters thought prevention hours. His comments were in response to 21, who said he feels naturally more overprotective for his daughters than his sons, which T.I. agreed with. And T.I. goes on to remark, because sons can't get pregnant, you can't keep her from running into one of them niggas. Me and Lil Duval, and I'm not sure who Lil Duval is, I assume one of his hippity-hop cohorts, me and Lil Duval call it thought prevention hours. Keep your daughter off the pole. You spending time going to daddy-daughter dances and taking her on trips where it's just you and her, those are thought prevention hours. You don't do that? They're going to be somewhere in Magic City trying to figure it out. And I believe Magic City is a strip club of some ill repute. That is absolutely necessary for any father, he continued. If you ain't putting in your thought prevention hours and your daughter end up a dancer, don't blame her now. You did not set an example. You did not show what the fuck it was that she should be doing versus what she's doing. So, frankly, no lie detected. I don't know what it says about our society. Well, let me rephrase. I do know what it means. But I just find it humorous, I guess, that, you know, a guy who, some of his lyrics, you know, include, loaded 44 on the low, referring to keeping a concealed illegal, 44, a pistol on his person. No, he's not criticized for that. You know, he's getting called out because, I don't know, he wants to spend time going to daddy-daughter dances with his kids. So bug blacks aren't safe, and even gangster blacks apparently are not safe from the eye of Sauron of neoliberalism.
Yeah, it just goes to show you, you know, what people react to. I think we've gone from not really think we've gone from a, I mean, I think even into the 90s, certainly in the 80s, if you were, and you know, like you could, like, wasn't it a plot point in, I think The West Wing. Like, I never watched it, but which was in the 2000s even. It was like the kind of liberal, you know, shitlib fanfic, libtard fanfic of like, what if Al Gore had won the 2000 election? I believe it was either that or like a shitty movie from around the same time where it was like a major plot point that the president was an atheist. And this was like a problem, right? Of like, you know, oh my God, people aren't going to, you know, how could we deal with an atheist president? I mean, not to say, I guess there's still a little bit of a residual effect of, you know, Joe Biden has to kind of play act at being a pretend Catholic and Nancy Pelosi. I mean, I think that's a little bit more complicated in that it just provides cover for them within a certain kind of narrative framework. But I don't think anyone would care. I don't think it would affect things really meaningfully. Certainly, you know, just like it would not lead to any kind of social opprobrium or anything of the sort for any of these people to be like, you know, I mean, being gay is now celebrated. I before I was even properly red-pilled, so to speak, I remember, well, I guess I was sort of in the process. I remember oh man, this must have been 2014 or 2015 or thereabouts. And I just happened to catch like a minute, it was on the TV of the Stephen Colbert thing. And he had, I think it was Ian McKellen on, I can't remember. But the whole thing was like, it was chilling for some faggot shit. and Colbert asked him, I don't even remember what it was just, but Ian McKellen, I believe it was me, Ian McKellen was like, well, I'm gay. And the audience fucking, you would have thought he was like, I solved cancer or something. He was like, yeah, woo, this guy's a faggot. He loves to like take it in the butt. Like it was just losing their fucking minds because the dude said like, I'm gay. And I like my stomach turned. I was like, what the fuck is wrong? I mean, it's like, even though I was like, I was always like retained that visceral reaction, but I was sort of, you know, at that time was kind of on the train of like, you know, whatever they want to do, I don't really care. And now, of course, I've seen the error of that position. But just to have this visceral, I was like, what, we've gone, I mean, it's one thing if you want to say, you know, you want to say like you can do whatever, but to celebrate this and now realize we're in a society where like a father who, you know, wants his daughters to behave well and to not have, you know, sex or children outside of marriage and to, you know, live normal, you know, all of that, we're completely 180 degree Jew inversion land where up is down and left is right. And, you know, good is evil. And it's just absolutely insane.
You're not going to be allowed to publicly raise your children right. You're going to be demonized for it. And that's why they want to make homeschooling illegal. Hillary Clinton said as much way back when she said, you know, some people who say that they believe in white supremacy want to homeschool their children and teach them those values. So we have to ban homeschooling. I believe that was the shot of her point there. And that whole thing is just because they want to control the values that your children are given. And if you object to that, they feel that you are overstepping your boundaries as a parent, which is absolutely backwards. They are overstepping their boundaries as a neighbor, as a member of the community. They are trying to insert themselves into your home and usurp your role as a parent.
Well, I mean, that kind of goes back to, you know, you're talking about like the fundamental, like natural, God-ordained or nature-ordained, however you want to articulate it, you know, bond between parent and child. And, you know, I think it goes back to, I guess, what you would call cultural Marxists viewing, or even, heck, doctrinaire Marxists viewing the family unit as something that, you know, is a stumbling block, you know, for the economic and social utopia, you know, that we need to achieve. You know, the, I don't have the source at my fingertips, but you know, I think it was in the 20s and 30s, right? Doctrinaire Marxists remarked on how a nuclear family, like, you know, having a present father, you know, paves the way for fascism, that it creates a template, if you will, in the micro for a strong man being in charge and, you know, having the final say on things, creating in people that latent desire or that latent, I don't know what you would call it, proclivity, I guess, to, like, you know, an evil fascist overlord or something of that flavor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just kind of spills out in all ways. And also, I should clarify, too, before we dig deeper into it, I'm not trying to praise T.I. or anything. I think primarily what, you know, a broken clock is right twice a day, right? And I guess this broken clock is right about how to, you know, spending time with one's children and especially one's daughters.
I mean, he's just doing the natural thing. It's not like he's discovered some deep hidden wisdom. It's just what parents want to do for their kids. It's an instinct.
Yeah, precisely. And, so I don't want anybody to misconstrue this as me, like, you know, saying the dude's a role model by any means.
Yeah, don't be a rapper.
Go be a rapper somewhere else. Pretty show title. But yeah, just, you know, any semblance of decency, right? Like, you know, just is a potential moment of controversy. You know, enforcing, recognizing on instinct and just trying to keep your daughter from being a stripper, you know, that's ammunition, you know, just to be hurled back at you, an excuse to pearl clutch by people who think that children should take puberty blockers.
It just always pisses me off because we shouldn't have to do this. We shouldn't have to be in the situation where you have to go out of your way to prevent your daughter from becoming a stripper. That should be the default. That should be no effort. I should be able to do that without having to try. But now you have to fucking try. And that's the problem. We need to have this as normal. And that's what our goal is. At least one of them. One of our goals in this struggle is to have that normality returned. That is what we need to secure for our children. That normality. Not the exceptionalism of basic parenting. It shouldn't be exceptional. It should just be the default. And it just frustrates me that's where we are.
I mean, precisely, right? Like, we must secure a future where white children aren't strippers or child drag queens.
Yes, you're right. It's just painful that's where we have to go back. I guess go forward to. That is what we have to dig ourselves up from.
And just really quickly,
the worst What's take up? Says your daughter should join Only Clans. Well, that's better than the one I came up with the other day, which was Only Feds. Only Clans. I love
Only Clans is great. I still like Nig X for the show title, though, I have to say.
Thank you, chat.
Oh, man. No, that is delightful. But yeah, you know, and then to round back really quickly as well to DK, what you were talking about briefly with a plot point on the West Wing. You know, you mentioned that there's a B plot, right, where the president was an atheist and that was sort of an undercurrent of tension. Man, I'll tell you what, I'll take an atheist over just a satanic pedophile. I'm pretty openly Christian, right? But, like, you know, somebody who's just agnostic or atheist is, that would be a step up from what we got.
Maybe. Yeah, well, it just goes to show how much farther things have just, like, everything is accelerating badness, you know, even just from, like, a few years ago. Yeah.
But anyway, I think we've all gotten our blood pressure up, you know, sufficiently on this. You know, and I think I've kind of exhausted the topic here. You know, DK or Nikkei, you know, did Did we want to touch any on the Nashville incident? Admittedly, I have not prepped on that.
Please go. I mean, I don't have a like prep exact. I mean, I think it's still a very. Nikkei, why don't you go first?
Yeah. So to begin this, you know, Borzoi vindicated on decade of boomer jihad. What it seems like, unless this is just full gay up, but you know, it might be.
Let's back up for a second and just explain what happened, because, you know, for those who maybe haven't noticed, I know some people, you know, but on December 25th, Christmas Day, 2020, in the morning sometime, what was it, like 8 or 9 Eastern, something like that, it was pretty early, there was an RV, well, there were reports I first saw because I was doing like a little browsing morning Twitter, and I saw people like, I think before it had even exploded, there were some reports of like a suspicious RV and something, and then it exploded. And then it later came out that it had some kind of loudspeaker set up and was saying like, everybody clear out, I've got a bomb, like basically. Oh God, no, please don't clip that. And then apparently some police officers, it was like 5 white and 1 black police officers were deployed, and they went door to door telling people to evacuate. And then the RV exploded. Fortunately, nobody in the outside was hurt. I've heard reports eventually that there was one body discovered in the wreckage. I haven't seen any confirmation of that. I have my doubts. This whole thing glows brighter than the fucking sun. So, you know, I don't know exactly, like, you know, Nikkei, you can, I saw something about a boomer that may have been involved. That may be, you know, I don't know. I don't trust anything at this point, but that may just be me. But so, sorry, go on.
That's why it's so hard to talk about these things, because, you know, on the one hand, it could be plausible that boomer jihad has commenced.
Yes, that's correct.
And on the other hand, it's also plausible that it's a fucking gay op.
Right.
And we can't really tell the difference because information is so hard to come by and the sources are questionable at best.
Yeah.
You just don't know when your mind is being fucked with, or, you know, when you actually get some piece of salient information.
I'll say two things. Number one, as we're recording this, I just got a notification as of like 20 minutes ago and 5 minutes ago, there's an investigation of a white box truck in Lebanon, Tennessee. I saw, I don't know if that may or may not be anything. It probably is nothing.
Paranoia.
Right. Well, there was another, I saw there was some kind of investigate. There was some kind of other, you know, thing, I guess on the day after Christmas that ended up being nothing. And so, you know, people are going to be on a little, you know, a little bit jumpy, and for good reason. There's apparently the building that was targeted was an AT&T facility, that like is some kind of interchange, like important kind of infrastructure wise for AT&T service, which in turn is important regionally for 911 service. There was reports that 911 was out for area parts of Tennessee, Kentucky, and I forget elsewhere, but like it was a major geographic, made big swath of land that didn't have 911 service, and they also grounded flights out of Nashville. And then apparently that part is definitely true and confirmed. I saw something that I couldn't confirm myself, but there was a report that the airspace above where the detonation occurred had been designated like a no-fly zone, essentially, and that you pilots would be prevented from flying over it with deadly force. All of which is like, again, this glows quite brightly. So, you know, I how to say? Well, did you have something you want to say, Bellerfon or Nikkei first?
Oh no, I'm good, man. Go with it.
Yeah, I just want to say, like, there's a danger in, to me, I think there's a danger in normalcy what? Bias. Like, sorry, yeah?
Oh, sorry. Never mind.
sorry. normalcy bias is fine. You know, obviously there's a reason why we have it, and it's typically quite good. And you don't want to be jumping at shadows, and you don't want to be, you know, like that's fine, that's good. But we are not living in normal times. Like there's a lot of, you know, things that are happening, and the situation politically is I think much more fluid and much more dangerous than people necessarily realize. You know, I don't think that, I mean, that as we're recording this on December 27th, 2020, there's on January 6th, when the Congress will certify the results of the election for Joe Biden, there's a planned, like the biggest Trump march ever in DC. We'll see, you know, I don't know exactly what people expect to have happen or you know,
have a little march. Not going to do any good.
Well, it's not going to change the result, and it's not going to kick off, you know, Boogaloo. My fear, and this is why I bring it up, is that my fear is that it's you know, because they already gotten twice now these get-togethers in D.C. for the MAGA people, and twice they've gotten the Charlottesville kind of treatment. The first time was worse than the second time. They were more prepared. The Proud Boys really kicked quite a lot of ass, and good for them. They knew what to expect as far as getting the Charlottesville treatment, and made the most of it. But like, this seems like it's going to be quite a lot of people, which means exponentially more opportunities for some kind of gay op. You combine that with this thing in Nashville, which really, really to me looks like some kind of gay op. And you combine it with a volatile situation. I mean, these people, you're talking about millions of people. Like, I mean, I'll be straight, cards on the table. I wouldn't even say believe. The election was stolen. I mean, I'm sorry. I know that's kind of against the TRS line to some extent. Whatever. We have video of DMV Shaniqua's pulling out, you know, giant stacks of ballots in the middle of the night after they told everyone to leave and lied about the reason why. Like, the election was stolen, period. And people know, somewhere upwards of, like, 50% of the country, if not more, both Republican and Democrat, you have huge percentages of Democrats, like 20-30% at least, who agree that the election was stolen. They don't care. It's not like they, you know, want to change the result or anything, but they know the election was stolen. Everybody knows. I mean, at least half the country thinks the election was stolen, which is a very, very bad situation for the existing power structure. You know, the fundamental legitimacy of their control is really at stake in a way it hasn't been. I mean, I can't even really come up with a historical analogy. And tensions are as high as they have been since the end of the War of Northern Aggression. So it's a very volatile situation. It's a very dangerous situation. And there's a large contingent of people. I think most of the people, you know, you talk about 50% at least of the country understands that the election was stolen. Not all of them are, you know, the vast majority are not willing to do anything about it, and certainly are resigned, you know, to Joe Biden becoming the next president. But then you're talking about at least a couple million people, at least. Many of whom, if not, you know, I mean, it's a really kind of interesting question, how many people are going to show up in D.C., but you're talking about millions of people who, it's not even, it's the Q movement, it's not that they, like, these are people who are fully 100% convinced that, like, there is a plan, and Trump is going to end up, you know, either declaring martial law or winning in the courts, or somehow Trump is going to be president. And when that doesn't happen, I don't think, like, I'm concerned about the possibility for gay ops. I'm concerned about the possibility for more episodes like this Nashville episode, or for this episode to become a kind of template for you know, further action, because everything about it, from the broadcasting to the choice of targets to the way that nobody was injured and that was kind of deliberate, like, and I saw some analysis that was indicating that whoever it was that was responsible seems to, like, they had eyes, or they could easily have had eyes on, as the thing was developed, to, like, probe the, you know, emergency response protocols and so on. So, like, this is not necessarily likely to be a one-off. And then, you know, to me, it's like, you know, again, I could be wrong, and that, you know, plans change and people, you know, but like, look at this objectively. Look at what's going on. We're talking about a situation where they basically manufactured just however many votes they wanted. Elections have been fake and gay for a long time. And you know, Democrat urban machines are legendary. And, you know, we all know, like, in 1960s, Kennedy stole it from Nixon and all this stuff. Okay. But it's one thing to say that elections are fake and gay and electoral politics are fake and gay and voting is fake and gay because, you know, we don't get anything transactionally out of it. That's true. We don't. There's a kosher sandwich. It prevents us from getting anything that's actually meaningful for us. And that's it, that means the system is illegitimate, full stop. I agree with all that. That's all very, very true. However, like, I don't know, you know, we're now in kind of uncharted waters as far as not only is the political system fake and gay to the extent that we can't like get anything that we want transactionally out of the system. It's fake and gay in the sense that, like, literally they don't even care. Like, they don't need to maintain a fig leaf of plausible deniability. They could just, like, we have it on video. We have DMV Shaniquas, like, manufacturing votes in the middle of the night to give a swing state to buy. And we have, you know, and the observers were kicked out of Philadelphia. I mean, I don't want to go through, I'm not going to litigate the point. Like, and if you don't accept that's fine, I guess, too. But the point is, like, they literally don't care how bad it looks. They don't care about just flaunting election laws. They don't care about kicking observers out. They don't care about pulling ballots out in the middle of the night and furiously scribbling Biden and not filling in, you know, any other down ballot races. They don't care. They don't care how bad it looks. They're going to do whatever it takes. They just don't care. Nobody's going to stop them. What that means in practical terms for us is 2 years from now, 2 years and one day after he's been inaugurated, Joe Biden suddenly develops, you know, an illness or 25th Amendment or whatever it is. Kamala Harris is president. Kamala Harris has no natural children. She's married to a Jew. Kamala Harris, you know, sucked and fucked her way to the top. Kamala Harris has no qualms. Kamala Harris is, I mean, she's an idiot, but that's not the issue. The point is she's even better than Joe Biden, a perfect puppet for Zog, which means that we get 2 years of Kamala Harris from 2022 to 2024, and then they can manufacture as many ballots as they need to keep her in office for two more terms. That means 10 straight years of Kamala Harris on top of the 2 years of Biden. Because they don't care. Because they and look, I mean, again, maybe they're going, it could be that they decide that, you know, if things get really bad or really, you know, they really need that escape valve, that pressure release valve, maybe they'll you know, maybe they'll like toss it to Josh Hawley in 2024, 2028, or again, these things, you know, obviously plans can change, but as things stand, from my perspective, sure looks like the shot is 2 years of Biden, 10 fucking straight years of Kamala Harris from 2022 to 2032. And then, you know, we evaluate from there. And there's nothing we can do. There's nothing anyone can do to stop it because, you know, election laws be racist and shit. You know, the mail-in ballots are here to stay and they're just going to keep doing it. And they'll manufacture whatever excuse they need to manufacture as many millions of ballots as they need to stay in power as long as they want to. And so we need to think long and hard about, like, what 10 years of the FBI under Kamala Harris is going to look like. It's not something it's not coming down the pike immediately. And I know that there's a kind of take, you know, I've heard Mike say, and I don't necessarily completely disagree that, you know, I took my glasses off and it's the exact same, you know, took my Donald Trump as president glasses, everything is the same. Well, maybe to start, but it's definitely not true that things can't get worse. Things can get worse. They can put more pressure in various ways on us. And that's a problem. That's and Nashville, I fear, is an ill omen, portent of things to come. But I'm curious to hear what you guys have to say.
I mean, my first thought is, you know, to take a serious thought and wrap it up in a shit post so it's more digestible. You know, if you think Sven has contempt for the audience, you know, really what's on display here is how most of the power brokers in the GOP have contempt for their audience. You know, that they're not fighting tooth and nail against this. You know, as you were hinting at, DK, right? Like, you don't have to be an investigative journalist. You don't have to be some crack gumshoe to have figured out, right? Like, huh, there's a lot of irregularities going on in a lot of swing states. Like, or even, even at just a casual level, right? Like if you're telling me that Joe Biden, you know, got more turnout, more percentage turnout in Detroit and Atlanta than Barack did, like, you know, pressing X pretty hard to doubt there, right? Yeah. To your point, unfortunately, they don't care. The nominally right, you know, GOP power brokers, they don't care. And I think what you were driving at, you tell me if I'm off base here, is that a lot of these boomers are pissed off rightly. And then this is how it manifests itself.
The FBI is like already good at, I mean, that's been their job for decades, right? Has been, you know, finding kind of mentally unbalanced people, pushing them over the edge into violence to further their political agenda, right? And there's going to be many ripe opportunities for them to do this, which, you know, again, makes it all the more critical to like circle back to something we were talking about before. Like the fundamental problem here is boomers and spiritual boomers believe in America. They believe in the process. They believe, you know, that there's justice in the justice system. And if everything just kind of works, then it's going to be, everything's going to be okay because, you know, and that's just not true. We do that the country, to whatever extent it may once upon a time have existed, it certainly hasn't existed since September 11, 2001. And, making it all the more critical to provide them with an explanatory framework that works, that is effective, that, you know, that allows them to anticipate what is going to happen and why. That I you could call that red pilling, I guess, but I mean, in some extent, to the extent that, like, quote, the red pill just means seeing reality as it is, sure, but it's not about getting them to believe things that are convenient to us or, you know, whatever. It's really about, at a certain level, really mostly about helping them. And you know, like, I don't know how many people are, I mean, I've heard a lot of people have Fed posting grandmas and people still trusting the plan, and whether or not they're kind of overtly Q, they're sort of, you know, Q curious or whatever.
The sentiment is there that the boomer's going to boom.
Yeah, and they're certainly closer than they ever have been. I mean, that's why when I was talking about this before, we played the clip from Lynn Wood and he's 1776 posting. Like, I really think the puppet masters made a miscalculation. They figured that the 17, like I think most of us and certainly myself, and still to some extent that 1776 was just a LARP and all this shit was just a LARP and they were never ever going to do anything ever. And so they could just, you know, push them however hard. The problem is we're kind of in this, you know, perfect storm of, on the one hand, like this Q gayop, which got completely out of their control and is now kind of got people primed and ready to think in broadly correct ways. Like there is a satanic pedo cabal, you know, Judaism is Satanism and they are pedophiles and they are in control. And, you know, and like a lot of the names are, yeah, they got them down some rabbit holes, but the Q narrative is broadly correct. And for that reason is kind of like escaped their control. And you combine that with just this naked display, this contemptuous display of, you know, we don't care how many people voted for either candidate. We're just going to just like, we don't care if there's literal video of us, you know, manufacturing ballots, we're going to do it. And you're not going to be able to do anything about it. But when you combine that with the Q narrative, you know, now people are in a situation where not only are they primed to think about 1776, they're like kind of looking at each other. I remember I saw there was a kind of early when I was still, you know, kind of, I wouldn't even say holding out hope for Tucker Carlson, just kind of, I just watched an episode of Tucker Carlson, which I haven't done in several, like a month now, but like right, not long after the election fraud happened, there was one of the observers who I believe was a politically a Democrat, but I guess he's one of these blue collar white Democrats you see. And he was like, you know, Tucker was interviewing him about like, you know, what happened and what he saw and just the, you know, just basically just complete illegality and contempt for election law that was on display. And the guy, like, kind of, after he's like said his piece, he sort of like turned to Tucker, he like looked at him straight in the eye, I guess through the, you know, the whatever the, you know, satellite link setup, whatever. He like looked at him straight, and he's like, so are we doing this or not, Tucker? Like, what's going, you know? And he's like, you know, inches from Fed posting on Fox News Live. And Tucker was sort of like, we're going to do, you know, whatever it takes. We're going to observe the process and blah, blah, blah. We're going to make sure we get to the bottom of this. And I was like, but there was like a seconds pause, right, between that, where it was, and just to see the raw emotion on the guy's face, he was like, sort of like, he's like, dude, this is like, you know, all this shit we talk about, like why we have a Second Amendment and tyrannical government and blah, blah, like, they're doing that. They did that. They got caught. Are we going to do something about it? Like, kind of looking each other at the eye. And okay, Tucker has a role to play, and he's never, ever going to Fed post on on his show. But I think, you know, there's a lot of these conversations that are happening between people, and I'm sure a lot of them are going to be having them on the way to this thing in D.C. on January 6th, and they're going to be having them there on January 6th. Ted Nochet asked me, are we doing this, DK? Stay home, people. This is not our fight. I'm not... Like, I don't know, that was, I understand that was sort of, you know, tongue in cheek, but I do mean to say, like, this is not, you know, we are my understanding of the Cuban Revolution, I think this is, you know, not uncommon for these kind of things, is you know, there was a lot of revolutionary movements happening in Cuba. Batista was very unpopular, and there was a lot of sort of, you know, different factions involved. Castro won, not because he had the biggest army. It was actually not the biggest army. Not because he had, you know, the most, you know, institutional support or anything of the sort. Castro won because he got all his other factional rivals to move first. And they all got in the fight with the Batista's government. And there was, you know, several kind of violent encounters, and it eliminated his rivals and weakened the regime's forces to the point where when he was in a position to take advantage, he was able to take advantage. And that's, I think, what we need to be focused on is, you know, this is not our fight. This, you know, because like from their perspective, the Q movement's kind of best case scenario. Let's say everything, let's say not that there is a plan, but let's say they get what they want, right? What does that mean in practical terms? Is this gay empire gets a few more years of being like marginally less gay than it would have otherwise? It means the legitimacy of the American regime is restored. That is not something that I want. I mean, I'm definitely fearful of, you know, what the Harris FBI is going to look like, and how long it's going to last, and the kind of shit they're going to be able to get up to over that time frame. But, you know, we'll have opportunities. They'll be there, you know, one way or another. We'll figure something out. I'm, you know, we're white and they're not. We're smart and these people are idiots. Actually, maybe we can conclude by I did want to maybe a palate cleanser on that. These people are fucking stupid. They gutted these institutions that used to have authority and wear them as a skin suit and demand everybody still, you know, respects them as much as they used to when they actually meant something. Well, I'm sorry, you killed these institutions a long time ago and you don't deserve any respect because you're a fucking retard and you're a fucking pedophile. Get the fuck away from me and my family. Yeah, no, this is not our fight, and obviously our guys should be absolutely nowhere near any, you know, if you had, I can't imagine who this would apply to, but if there's anyone who had some kind of thought as far as, like, you know, being at any one of these events in any of the state capitals or in D.C., please don't. that's not just, well, whatever, that's enough.
Yeah, shit can always go bad, and while for the most part it hasn't, at these, you know, Stop the Steal, Million MAGA March, you know, it could this time. And, you know, what you might get out of going is, you know, unclear at best, or understood but very marginal. And, you know, the consequences of things do go shit hit the fan can be dire. And we'd rather people like you, dear listener, not be caught up in such things.
Again, we want to position ourselves to take advantage, because this is not our fight. This is not our thing. You know, we are doing something different. We what it means, I mean, from my perspective, what it means to be a dissident, I dissent. I do not accept the legitimacy of the American regime, period. You know, this is not a legitimate system. Period. And I'm not trying to save it. I'm not trying to fix it. I don't think it can be saved or fixed, which is sort of why I think these people are, like, I think that's their fundamental mistake they're making. But to whatever, you know, let's say they succeed. Okay, all that does is sort of give this, you know, gay corpse a few more, like, you know, I don't know. I've lost the metaphor, but you understand what I'm saying.
A few more prep injections to keep the AIDS. Yes,
exactly. So, you know, we want to be positioned to take advantage. That means being smart. That means building out our local social networks with family, like-minded friends, and so on. And, you know, making sure we have practical skills, learn to cobble, et cetera. You know, we've been over, it bears repeating, but yeah, that is the mode that we are in now. And the, you know, and really, you know, even under, I do think there's certain, you know, they're certainly going to put more pressure on movement leaders and this kind of thing. I fully expect that, but you know, as long as we stay within the strict confines of black letter law and things like that, there's really, you know, it's hard. And I think the one side effect of that will also be like, I'm sure a lot of people, you know, discuss this and notice this, but, you know, it's precisely the people who don't understand the nature of the regime who, like boomers who believe in the American project and they're, you know, flabbergasted at what they're seeing are the ones who are Fed posting the hardest. Right. And, you know, the speech restrictions target people like, you know, Sargon of Akkad or just these kind of shit tier midwit type, conservatards. And so the more that they like that, cause that, and that's a fundamental problem that they have is that the more that they like, they can't crack down on us harder without sweeping up, you know, more and more millions or really tens of millions of functionally just normal conservatard type white people like this girl we were talking about, you know, and so the more, and that is going to be a big problem for them. Because in, you know, you fast forward a little bit and I mean, yes, again, there's things they can do, but, once we have our own, if we have things like our own banks, our own payment processors, things like this that are in the works, you know, our own, or even just our own barter social networks, you know, you get people out in the sticks somewhere and okay, you're no longer working for, you know, bureaucrat gang or for Fortune 500 company, but you eat, your family eats, and you're more personally and spiritually fulfilled than you were before. And now you're living around a bunch of our guys, like in a way that's way more dangerous to them than the previous system where it's like, okay, yeah, you know, I have a nice job and a nice salary, but I live in fear of getting doxxed. I live in fear of, you know, that I have to be in on Twitter or whatever. Yeah, okay, like, you know, I mean, there's benefits to both, but as things stand, I think things can move in a really positive direction even under that kind of repression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, there's a future where, you know, you can have where alt-tech application for Swazi swap where you can barter with your friends online.
Yes.
Speaking of bartering, just really quick to interject, we did have a particularly generous DLive donator. Mel Gibson's uncle just donated one Ninjagini, and he just wanted to drop the following message. Thanks for everything this year. I love you, guys. Hope you all have a happy new year. So just wanted to give a quick shout out.
Thank you, friend. We love you, too. We really do, and we really appreciate it. Happy new year. Merry Christmas, everybody. You know, stay safe and stay cozy. Yeah, if it's all right, I think because we're running a little low on time, I don't want to read the whole thing, but it was just this too delicious to pass up. And on the note of how retarded our elites are and just how fake everything about them is that all right? Or I know I've been.
Well, yeah, the only thing that I had in the hopper was about Pornhub, purging a lot of its unverified accounts and just going over that. But I think that's been touched on.
Was there new news? I remember that was news. Has there been subsequent developments on that, or was it just they're continuing to purge?
No real new movement on that. Just the, you know, I was just going to dig in a bit to MindGeek, the parent company, and, you know, how it relates to like a previous lawsuit, from one of the folks that was hosted on Pornhub. And how they had tricked a bunch of girls into you know, doing porn when they thought it was a modeling shoot. But you know, that would take way too much time. Why don't you take the reins, man, and hit us with what you got?
All right, yeah, we could do that. I'm sure there'll be more. We can talk about Pornhub another, because I mean, pornography generally is a huge topic, obviously, and something worth discussing. But yeah, okay. So this is a Politico story. Washington's secret to the perfect Zoom bookshelf: buy it wholesale. Books by the foot curates shelves full of books for Washington offices, hotels, TV sets, and now Zoom backdrops. Let me just read the first few paragraphs and then we can get, and then, yeah, just to like get, in a place like Washington, small, interconnected, erudite means like well-learned. I mean, just give me a break.
Harry Potter doesn't count.
Yeah, exactly, right? Being well-read can create certain advantages. So too can seeming well-read. The, quote, Washington bookshelf is almost a phenomenon in itself. Whether in a hotel library, at a think tank office, or on the walls behind the cocktail bar at a Georgetown house. And as with nearly any other demand of busy people and organizations, it can be conjured up wholesale for a fee. Books by the Foot, a service run by the Maryland-based bookseller Wonderbook, has become a go-to curator of Washington bookshelves, offering precisely what its name sounds like it does. As retro as a shelf of books might seem in an era of flat panel screens, Books by the Foot has thrived through Democratic and Republican administrations, including that of the book-averse Donald Trump. And this year, the company has seen a twist. When the coronavirus pandemic arrived, Books by the Foot had to adapt to a downturn in office and hotel decor business and an uptick in home office Zoom backdrops for the talking head class. The Wonderbook staff doesn't pry too much into which objective a particular client is after. If an order were to come in for, say, 12 feet of books about politics, specifically with a progressive or liberal tilt, as one did in August, Wonderbook's manager, Jessica Bowman, would simply send one of her more politics-savvy staffers to the enormous box labeled, quote, politically incorrect, the name of Books by the Foot's politics package, to select about 120 books by authors like Hillary Clinton, implying Hillary Clinton never wrote a word, Bill Mayer, Al Franken, and Bob Woodward.
Yay!
The books would then the books would then be staged or arranged with the same care a florist might extend to a bouquet of flowers on a library cart, double-checked by a second staffer, and then shipped off to the residence or commercial space where they would eventually be shelved and displayed, or shelved and taken down to read. Yeah, sure. Only sometimes do Bowman and Wonderbook president Chuck Roberts know the real identity of the person whose home or project they've outfitted. Quote, when we work with certain designers, I pretty much already know it's going to be either an A-list movie or an A-list client. They always order under some code name, Bowman says. They're very secretive.
You faggot!
Yeah, I mean, like, so just if you ever had any doubts as to, like, man, these people seem really stupid, but, you know, they went to Harvard, like, or whatever. They're fucking retarded. They're ignorant. They're stupid. Hank Haslow made a great point on Myth of the 20th Century recently. He said it all. He's like, you know, like, fucking, you know, pick an Anon out of a hat. Like, come Hitler 1488 and rape wizard, you know, SS commandant on, you know, on Twitter. Like, both have outperformed our so-called elites at every level. Yeah, I'm calling dibs on those, by the way. But, like...
Look, I'll have you know, come Hitler is a very learned man, and I respect his opinions deeply.
I'm just saying, like, I mean, you, like, I mean, and people, you know, people know at this point, you know, sort of who the big, you know, I have a lot of respect for Bronze Age Pervert. I know he's not super popular, I think, but I think he's a smart guy. He deserves to be taken seriously, if nothing else. Tantum, you know, Quas Lacrimas on Twitter, Spotted Toad, like... You know, we have quant guys. We have all the guys. You know, not to, you know, sniff my own farts.
We got the best people, okay?
I am extremely smart and extremely learned. Like, I could run in circles around any one of these faggots. Like, I just have to...
And your bookshelf is probably legit, too. You didn't buy
it. I mean, I'm not going to show it to you, but yes, it is. And I didn't have to pay this retarded gay company in Georgetown to build it for me. But here I am shitposting behind an Anon account because I'm not allowed. I'm not part of the club. I'm not allowed to to do that. And neither are, you know, even significantly less edgy individuals. So it just, I mean, how many books does Mike read? You think Mike needs, you know, I mean, it's just, this is the kind of thing that really gets under my skin. And there's no, like, these people just need to be removed from power. There's no, like, you can't reach an accommodation with them, because fundamentally what's driving them is this. They some of them believe their own bullshit, but mostly they know. I mean, they wouldn't be, like, you know, they may have a show on CNN or whatever, but they wouldn't be contracting with this service if they, you know, weren't fundamentally fraudulent and knew that they were fundamentally fraudulent. They may have, you know, been able to rationalize to themselves that they believe that they deserve their, you know, show on CNN because of XYZ reasons. But, like, they know they're frauds. We know they're frauds. I think even a large part of their audience, I mean, it's just, like, you know, it's just cat ladies who are out of the loop on this. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know as far as, like, solutions were. I mean, you know, there's, you know, I can think of a couple, but as far as, you know, realistic short-term things to do, like, you know, I don't know. I don't have all the answers or anything. I just think it's important to hammer this point of, like, anytime you're feeling, you know, and this especially goes out to my Grug and Midwit, you know, friends in the audience and so on, you know, to say, I think the, you know, big brains are okay on this, but, like, anytime you think, like, you know, oh, I'm just a Grug, like, no, you may be a Grug, but there's honor and glory in being an honest Grug. You are a million times, these people don't know more than you. I guess that's my point, is, like, you could be the humblest Grug in our thing. Like, these people don't know more than you. They're not better educated than you. They're not, it's not just that, like, you're their moral superior because you're not a pedophile. Like, you literally, like, they may have gone to Harvard or Princeton or wherever. They are not better educated than you. And don't ever let them forget that. That's the thing. This is where boys always think, when was the last nonfiction book you read? You know, and paying for it by the foot doesn't count, you faggot.
By the way, real quick, the worst takes in the show chat just says, my bookshelf has rocks on it.
That works too.
That works too.
but anyway, you know, if I'm not cutting you off, DK, yeah, to the point, like, this, you know, the larger point, right, is, like, these, it's not just, this isn't a one-off company. This isn't something somebody does, like, once a year when they change out senators, when they change out, you know, White House staff. Like, no, this is a company with a staff, and, you know, their job is to make these folks look like they're not retarded. Like, there's a company whose dedicated purpose is to, you know, gussy up the elites and, make them just seem like, you know, give them the veneer of non-retardation.
It's professional signaling. It's a signaling contractor.
Yeah, the emperor has no clothes, and the emperor has no fucking books either. Like, that's what I'm taking. Right.
Yeah.
But forgive me, I cut you off.
No, that was done, and I think that I made the point I wanted to make. I just like, you know, every time you think that, like, you've seen just how fake and gay it is, you're like, oh no, it's actually even a little faker and gayer.
Yep.
The
reality of the bookshelf.
I just, and it irks me. I mean, you know, you see people who, you know, have these degrees that used to be considered prestigious, or I guess I guess that's the thing, is, like, some people still consider them prestigious. Like, why? Why? I mean, there was a time where these things meant something, not nothing. Now they mean less than nothing. Yep. Right. Or the opposite of what, you know, so just, you know, whatever. I said everything I had to say. All right. Are we ready to get out, or do we have any, bottom of the stack last minute stuff?
Oh, you know, no, I just had one final closing thought. Nikkei, did you have anything that you're busting at the seams to talk about?
Nah, there's just some dead college football player, some, like, you know, aspiring running back or whatever. He accidentally got shot. You know, we don't really know what happens. It's some black dude.
I'm sure it was like that video with the dude playing with the loaded rifle and shot himself in the head.
It's like, yo, that loaded? Yo, that loaded? Pow!
Oh, man. I'm assuming, because I looked into that a bit when you mentioned it in show prep. I just did a very cursory look into it, and it's very, you know, very like RIP in power. You know, oh, this is so tragic. Oh, you know, he was... As far as I can tell, he did not have
play with guns or you're black. You know, if you shoot yourself or a friend because you were not practicing firearm safety, you are just this jogger. So be safe with guns. A PSA from Nikkei.
Yeah, because they did not go into detail like about how, other than to say it appears that he may have accidentally shot himself. That was the only detail they provided.
And, you know what? He probably did.
So I think this is
wasn't a suicide, like accidental death, accidental suicide. So you know, don't do that.
What I was driving at was, I think there's a corollary to the Coulter rule where if they don't describe the manner of death, then you know it was presumably like super embarrassing or ghetto. You know, that he was in the middle of trying to flex on Instagram Live. You know, for his followers, and darn thing went off. But all blacks go to heaven. Isn't that how the movie title goes? So.
Did you notice a sign on the front of my house that said Dead Nigger Storage?
I think that you are looking for, I think the title you are looking for is All Nogs Go to Heaven.
Oh man, that was right in front of me and I didn't see it.
That's what I'm here for.
Oh man, dude, the low hanging fruit was just hitting me in the forehead and I couldn't take it. I didn't see it. the only other thing I had to discuss, and this is just more comfy posting, you know, extemporaneous, is just white pilling around the holiday season. So I was hanging out with some woke friends, at a bar recently, and we were catching up, we were, you know, just shooting the shit, having a good time, and we happened to run into like a gaggle of folks we did not know, four or five folks, and man, they were all, I don't know how the conversation got started, but they but long story short, we found a whole gaggle of Uncle Ted fans, like unironic, started quoting from Industrial Society and its future, and
Kaczynski.
What was that now?
Collapse.
Humiliation.
Kaczynski.
No, and I swear it wasn't Borzoi or Borzoi clones. But you know, there's really not much to that anecdote other than, one, they picked up on all the points that I would emphasize in it, right? Which is like, yeah, don't send angry letters. But, you know, his critique of technology, his critique of leftism, you know, is really salient. So if you can, you know, give that a read, Industrial Society and its future. But, you know, just one of the Christmas holiday season white pilling things about it was, you know, I didn't know these folks and they're in my area. You know, we're everywhere. There's more woke people out there than you know. And, it's just a nice little white pill to kind of hang your hat on, you know, in kind of a, what can sometimes be an anxious or trying season. That's really all I wanted to drive at. So, I don't know. Don't be afraid to drop references to
hot single and prims in your area.
Yeah, the difficult part is they're not online. You know, by definition,
you can't find them online, but they're there.
Dude, I got a carrier pigeon just rapping at my window with a with a lambskin scroll, you know, saying that Ann Prim's in my area
wanted if that you up.
Well, I think, you know, after we get done recording, that may be my new business model, my new Ponzi scheme I work on. Nice. But yeah, man, I just wanted to drop that little white pill in there that, you know, these folks are out there. And, you know, they might not be 100% on board, but, you know, damn it, I have more in common with that dude, you know, with those Ann Prim guys than I do with, you know, your boilerplate GOP. And, it is interesting to see people coming to what you think are secret sort of cloak and dagger conclusions, you know, getting woke on certain stuff, like, you know, in manners that you didn't even expect. So, you know, just y'all keep your eyes peeled. There might be more like-minded folks in your area than you realize. But with that, if unless anybody else had any final thoughts, why don't we get to our shills and plugs? Nike, what do you got to shill and plug for us, brother?
All right, we got the Young Whites on TRS. We've got I was on an episode of Achtung America, not Achtung Americaner, but on the same website as that. Learned Elders of Zyklon on Americaner.org. Yes, that should be out sometime soon. Check out their website. Also, check out American Kulak Project. Learn more. That's the Achtung Americaner episode you need to listen to with Aeneas on American Kulak Project. That's all I have to plug.
All right, awesome. And DK, what you got for us, man?
So Right Wing Dharma Squad remains on hiatus, but we aim to be back at some point. We anyway, it doesn't matter. In the meantime, and for those of you who are interested, we I have put up in the interim now two new episodes of the National Institute for Gamer Review, or NIGR. But you can I think that it was an issue with the RSS. We'll put an updated RSS in the show notes. So we have now full episodes on XCOM and Halo series, and then two GamerCore, we call GamerCore kind of like lay back, just, you know, shoot the shit thing. We had a more recent one about talking about the release of Cyberpunk and the new console generation for people who may be interested in hearing our takes on that. And the next episode will be on Civilization, and then we'll see after that. As always, if you have a request, or we have a bunch of ideas and different things, but if there's something you're particularly interested in maybe hearing us discuss and analyze, definitely just drop us a line. Also, I have a new Twitter account. I got the curse of the phone challenge that I could not answer to a number I no longer have access to. So you can find me on Twitter at DK_DharmaRaj if you haven't already.
Dharma All right.
Dharma Raj. It's a play because Dharma Raj means Dharma King. So like R-A-H, like the British Raj, and the Raj is the king, right?
I heard
so,
Ranch, and I'm like, yeah. Dharma Ranch, huh? Okay.
Yeah, we're having like a singularity of memes just occurring in our Twitter handles.
18 meditating monks in the fields of Dharma Ranch.
Ram Dharma Ranch, maybe for the next one, for the next account. I mean, all right, and then. Obviously, in terms of shills and plugs, you can find me here on the third rail and also occasionally in the gym. I am not on Twitter, but my based black friend, Belair Aquavius, is on there and occasionally posts and has pearls of wisdom. So feel free to hit him up there. But other than that, I would just encourage the listeners to go to church. And Frank, let's play us out. And remember, y'all, the real ethnostate was the friends that we made along the way. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.